You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on the brand new podcast app, Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with my co-host, David Ramil, and special guest, the Step Back Draft analyst, Trevor Magnotti. Trevor, who recently wrote a piece for the Step Back on five prospects that the Miami Heat should be targeting. And Trevor, you and I covered a couple of those prospects, actually three of those prospects, on our show last week, P.J. Washington, Romeo Langford, and Kevin Porter Jr. On today's show, we're going to talk about a couple of other prospects, Rui Hachimura, the Gonzaga big man, and then from North Carolina, Nasir Little. Let's start with Nasir Little. David and I did our scouting report a few weeks ago on Nasir Little. We're not breaking any news here. Really raw prospect, has 3-and-D potential, athletic guy, but was a big recruit coming out of high school. Didn't necessarily put it all together in his 1 year at North Carolina. But what did you see from Nasir Little?
Yeah, so I think you saw the flashes of what Nasir Little could become, especially looking at his high school transition into college, the things that he was really good at the high school level. There were hints of that. He has the potential to be a very high level shot maker off the dribble. Just his ability to be able to get into a jumper from a variety of different moves and situations is really exciting. And then on defense, he's just a very competitive defender, especially one-on-one. He does a good job of mirroring and denying the lane from opponents. And he has flashes where he can shut down anybody at the college level on any given possession. Problem is that wasn't very consistent. He struggled with playing time. He struggled with some of the finer things, off-ball defense, spot-up shooting, some of the things about his role that are probably more projectable to the NBA level, which is a little bit concerning. But yeah, I definitely think that this is a guy where you're drafting him hoping that like year three or year four is when he's really going to start showing signs of what he is going to be in his prime.
So the playing time is something that was a concern, because obviously he wasn't able to kind of figure out Roy Williams' system. And a lot of that has to do with just an overall lack of understanding, or it wasn't necessarily any kind of athleticism or lack of any kind, any physical issue. Obviously, as you said, he has all the physical tools to play at a higher level, even beyond collegiate and obviously into the NBA. But what was it about his mental abilities, or just the inability for him to kind of make that transition, that you saw, or have you seen anything as to why maybe he wasn't able to get any kind of consistent playing time?
Well, I think that he really struggled with kind of tunnel vision stuff on offense. When he got the ball, he was looking to score, didn't move the ball very well within their offensive system. And this North Carolina team moved the ball pretty well outside of Little. He was kind of like a play two guy instead of somebody that they tried to play through, because they knew that when he got the ball, he was going to be aggressive and going to try to attack. And that didn't seem to be what they necessarily wanted him to do. It was really effective for him in transition where he was at his best, but in the half court, he really struggled with kind of delineating what his role should be. And then on defense, just consistently lost off ball, struggled to recognize plays developing around him, and really had issues with trying to navigate pick and rolls and defend some of the bigger players that he was matched up with. Part of the reason that I think that he struggled so much was that he was being asked to kind of play as like a big three or even a four in some lineups. And this is a guy that I think in the NBA is probably more of like a 2-3 hybrid. Mm. And I think that if you get him playing more in the backcourt, he's going to be more comfortable. He's going to be defending at the point of attack a little bit more. He's going to be able to use his on-ball dribbling ability a little bit better, and I think it's going to be a little bit more functional for him.
Yeah, he strikes me as, obviously the physical attributes are there. He kind of, it feels like he is in the NFL draft the equivalent of like a Daniel Jones, where it's just like, you know, you always hear about these quarterbacks who have all the physical tools, have the physical profile of a pro system quarterback, right? They're always 6'6" and have a great arm. You know, they've got, you know, leadership skills, whatever it might be that the NFL is looking for. Little, you know, 7'2" wingspan almost, you know, built like a truck. Like, you just know that he's going to be able to hold up physically to the NBA. And then obviously there's flashes there, like you said. He strikes me as somebody who needs to get on the right team to really develop into what he needs to be. Maybe that wasn't even at a college level. It wasn't UNC. Maybe that was just like a bad fit for him. How much stock do you put into a guy who is such a big recruit, like a blue chipper guy coming out of high school, didn't really put it together in college? Like, how much of that do you think is on the program, on the player, and how do you just go about judging that, about analyzing that?
It's the hardest question in draft scouting, honestly. This is why we all missed on Donovan Mitchell, was because at Louisville, he was being used as a guy who pretty much only got to create off of dribble handoffs and never really got to bring the ball up himself and never really got to make a ton of reads and decisions that he has shown to be very good at in the NBA. Couple that with him playing in a press, and it was hard to figure out what his value was going to be on the defensive end, which has also turned out to be pretty high. So I definitely think that there are cases where you can forgive some of this stuff based on role, but you kind of have to, at a certain point at the end of the day, when you see as many mental lapses as Whittle had on both ends of the floor, that isn't because of role. That's because this is a guy that isn't processing the game well enough. And I think that separates things out a little bit. And that's why I'm a little bit further down on Whittle than I would be on – I'm a little bit lower on him than Cam Reddish, for example, or Romeo Langford. Because I think that, you know, those guys have a little bit more validity to that kind of situational component than I think Whittle does. I think a lot of the reasons that Whittle struggled were because of the way that Nasir Whittle plays.
Have you, and the answer to this question can definitely be no, but have you seen a prospect who didn't seem to be like mentally in the game and just like miss things on both ends, like what you're talking about with Nasir Little? Have you seen somebody just completely overcome that? Maybe not in year one, but in your analysis from where they went in college to where we're seeing that person now in the NBA, has somebody just overcome that?
Well, I think the best example of this recently is Jaylen Brown. Him at Cal and him in Boston are very different players. And I think that was a little bit situational, but also I think that Brown really grew into his skill set as he got stronger and kind of unlocked a lot of the stuff that he thought he was good at but wasn't actually good at when he was at Cal. You know, him being able to leverage his strength off the dribble a little bit more and being able to defend up positions a little bit more definitely benefits him at the NBA level now that he has been in a strength program and has kind of figured out that he has the ability to apply the tendencies that he has in his game. And I think that that is an avenue where I could see Nasir Whittle working out very, very well as well, because I think if he continues to work on his jump shot and becomes more of a weapon off the catch and continues to improve his handle, suddenly a lot of his decision-making issues on the offensive end become a little bit more positive because he's able to apply his skill set a little bit better than he showed that he was this year at North Carolina.
Yeah, our listeners, our long-term listeners, know that I have issues with the draft in general because it's so hard to project, because there are players who make these leaps, and because especially in a one-and-done system, you have such a small sample size of what these players are capable of. You're looking back to what they were in high school, and so much of that is skewed by the kind of pressures that they have or the kind of freedom that they have to do whatever it is that they want to for the most part. And you talk about mental lapses or a lack of awareness, and I know we'll get this into our next prospect as well, but, you know, how much of this is something like that can be overcome by, say, film study, or, and as you just pointed out with Jaylen Brown? Is it just more about fine-tuning a skill set and learning how to apply that skill set in the right situation? Is it, could it just be simply a matter of a lack of general IQ? And I mean, it's not to say that Nasir Little or anybody is quote-unquote dumb, but is it just something that maybe they're just not quite getting this or not quite understanding? Look, we see plenty of NBA players that don't have that kind of capacity. They just don't understand the situation. One on the Heat's roster, Hassan Whiteside, looks often lost because he just doesn't seem to process things as quickly. Oh. When you're talking about mental awareness, is this, can you see Nasir kind of overcoming it by, say, you know, either by virtue of film study or something else other than just applying a specific skill set to a specific playing regimen or whatever?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And I mean, you guys have another player who kind of fits alongside that in that same mold as Little of not really understanding what you're functionally able to do versus what your skills are and how you're able to apply them. And Deion Waiters, I mean, ooh, another player who just does not have the understanding of what he actually is capable of at the NBA level versus kind of what his skills are kind of in a vacuum in basketball. So I definitely think that there is a lot of this stuff that is just kind of innate. I definitely think the one thing that I harp on, and we'll talk about this with our next prospect, is processing speed, the ability to process the game as it builds around you and plays as they develop around you is something that is the hardest thing in basketball to learn. And it's also probably the most important skill to have. And that's something that just doesn't get better. I mean, the example I always go to with this is Eric Bledsoe, a guy who has become, you know, a starting point guard on a 60 win team and has a ton of skills and is able to apply himself in a positive way for his team. But at the end of the day in the playoffs, when things are so fast and the schemes are so complex, he just doesn't see the way that the team or he just doesn't see the way that the play is developing quick enough to be able to be consistently effective. And I think that that's an issue. I think that the one thing that is working in Little's favor, though, is that by all accounts, he is one of the hardest workers in this draft class. Everything that you hear about Nasir Little off the court is that this guy is almost pathological in his work ethic and his competitive drive. And we've seen that work positively for guys who were in this situation before. There were a lot of questions about Colin Sexton at the beginning of last season, and we kind of saw a little bit of a transformation in the way that his game developed after the first half of his rookie season. And I think a lot of that can be attributed to, you hear the coaches talk about him and you hear stuff from the beat reporters in Cleveland. And this is a guy who shows up at 5 o'clock in the morning, the day of a game, to work on stuff and try to improve. And he is a pathologic worker. And I think that that's something that Little can kind of salvage a lot of this stuff with, is if he can really put in the time and it really has that drive to be able to consistently get better, that those are the guys that you want to bet on overcoming the type of issues that Little has.
So really quick, where is Little on your personal big board then?
He was at number 14 on my pre-combine big board. I'm kind of still in the process of figuring out my final one, but he's probably going to end around that range, probably 14 to 18.
Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll talk about Rui Hachimura. But first, today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Go book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere you can go. Hotels.com, be there, do that, get rewarded. And thanks to Untuckit for sponsoring Locked On Heat. If you're looking for a great gift idea, Untuckit shirts are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to untuckit.com and use the promo code NBA to get 20% off of your purchase. Trevor Magnotti with us, draft analyst over at The Step Back. We talked about Nasir Little. Let's talk about now Rui Hachimura. When David and I did our scouting report, we really liked Rui. Do I get that right, David? We liked his raw talent. We liked the potential that he had.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that we were talking about, and certainly in context of a lack of awareness, is our feeling that because he had played, you know, he's only played a few years at a higher level.
Yeah, started when he was 14. Yeah,
that's right. So because of that, our feeling is that the skills are there, and eventually that awareness might come. But I'm sure we'll get some level of disagreement there.
Well, Trevor, a quick question, because he started playing at 14. We've heard about these cases before, specifically in that Pascal Siakam, and that almost. I feel like that almost helps guys now. Like, oh, you haven't played organized basketball until you were a teenager? Well, we'll take a flyer on you. Do you feel like that might be a little too in vogue right now, that idea?
Yeah, I think it is, because, I mean, we've had a couple really good success cases here. Pascal Siakam, obviously, right now is the big one. Joel Embiid, also a guy who picked up the game late. But I think that's kind of... that's kind of getting a little oversold, especially specifically in Hachimura's case. The big things that I kind of look at there are like, yeah, he picked up the game at 14, but that was still 7 years ago. He's 21 now, and I think there's a big difference between, you know, a guy like Embiid, who picked up the game at 16 and then was that good at 19, or Siakam, where he was kind of playing basketball but didn't really get to like a big level until he was about 17-18. Hachimura, once he started playing, he was kind of the national star for Japan at those junior levels, and he had experience kind of playing in big atmospheres. And I think that while it wasn't the American game and it wasn't consistent and it wasn't like the consistent spotlight that all of the top prospects get in the United States, I mean, he was still under a little bit of a microscope. And I think that kind of gets oversold a little bit, just because Japan is not like a huge basketball culture, but it is a growing basketball culture. And when you have kind of a guy who's played their entire high school career, played 3 years in college, and was kind of a national darling a little bit as a high school prospect, that argument doesn't hold as much water to me as it does for some of the other guys that case applies to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm curious, you know, obviously you talk about the fact that he played in Japan, and maybe they don't have the same level of competition as other countries, or certainly not in the United States. But I mean, clearly that has to be taken into consideration, right? Just because he's the best, I mean, you could be the best player in a country that has a middling program, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to, you know, play at a higher level, or you know, he's gotten attention, obviously. And as you point out, but, you know, don't you see any kind of potential there, or do you think he's already gotten past that point at 21 where he can't take his game to another level?
Well, I definitely think there's ways that he can take his game to another level. The biggest one is going to be adding shooting to his profile. He shot very well this year on limited attempts from mid-range and beyond. He only took 36 threes this year, and I think only took, I believe it was 60 for his career. And that, I think, is the one thing that he needs to add, because if he doesn't have that, pretty much nowadays, if you're a big and you can't provide any shooting value, then you need to have a positive defensive value, because otherwise you're kind of Jahlil Okafor or one of these other guys that just kind of has that throwback post game that was really effective 20 years ago, but now is kind of antiquated in the game. And that's kind of what I kind of worry about with Hachimura on offense, is that he has a lot of skills and he has a lot of ways to be able to get baskets, but I kind of worry that he has a little bit of an antiquated style. And if he doesn't get that shooting development, I think that he's going to be a guy that's going to struggle to see playing time unless it's in like specific lineups that are tailored around him, which obviously for a guy that is going to be probably a huge negative on the defensive end, that's not something that you're going to be very invested in.
You know, I think one of the things that stood out, and Trevor, correct me if I'm wrong here, but in the draft process of a guy like Siakam and a guy like Joel Embiid, it was one of the positives for those guys was their innate feel for the game, right? And I think that with Embiid and Siakam, both their intelligence and their basketball IQ is kind of put them in a place where they're able to process things that quick. Like we've heard 100 times about Joel Embiid's processing speed, that he'll see the defense do something and when they zig, he'll zag, and he kind of figures it out on the fly. Pascal Siakam with his development, most improved player, probably we've seen that. But having that innate feel, right? Like even if you've only been playing 3, 4, 5, 6 years, that feel could be it can be put on display pretty quickly. With Rui, it might maybe be people searching for that late bloomer a little bit happening here with all the raw talent. Look, the dude's still extremely talented and athletic and all this stuff. But do you think that feel can be evident even that early on in somebody's playing career, and that was evident in guys like Siakam and these other late bloomers?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, Embiid was a savant, and we heard kind of the same thing in stories. You can hear it in stories of Hakeem Olajuwon as like a college freshman or as a high school player. That was another guy who started late and kind of had that innate feel. One of, honestly, probably the best of all time in the defensive end in terms of feel for the game. Siakam a little bit less so, but Siakam also had the counter of he just had the natural handle and touch and all of the things that we're seeing really get fleshed out this year with his creation ability. He always showed little hints of that. And that's, again, I think a thing that we're really not seeing so much with Hachimura. He does a little bit of that stuff, particularly putting the ball on the deck, but he's more of a little bit of a straight line driver right now. Whereas Siakam had, you know, these hints here and there where he could make these really complex drives off the dribble that he's showing the ability to do here. So I think that Siakam's breakout definitely kind of helped Hachimura in the same way that like a Donovan Mitchell breakout last year kind of helped, you know, like a Landry Shamet get some opportunities, I think, just because they kind of had similar skill sets and were able to kind of create similar looks in college. I think that there's always going to be kind of that fad thing kind of carrying over from
after Draymond Green got big, everybody wanted a 6'6" power forward.
Yeah, Caleb Swanigan goes in the first round because the Blazers think that he can be Draymond Green. And we're seeing Rui Hachimura get Draymond Green comps, which that's definitely a thing you can do.
Where's Rui on your board then?
I have him 41st.
That's not first round. There's only 30 teams.
It's not as bad as Tyler Herro, who's also getting first round consideration in that range, and
I'm
not even on my board. But yeah, I've had Hachimura in the 40s consistently throughout this year, just because like this has been a problem for him throughout his career, and the improvements that he's made have all kind of been outside of that instinct feel thing. And if you're an upperclassman, even though he's a little bit younger for an upperclassman, and you've shown zero development in terms of defensive instincts and feel, it's probably not coming. We see that a lot with these kind of upperclassmen guys who are a little bit older. The development curve for your ability to kind of process the game kind of tails off through your first couple years in college. And by the time that you get to be a junior or senior, you're probably where you're going to be for a lot of that stuff. You can always raise your game a little bit of a level going up to the NBA, but you know, somebody who is a bad upperclassman decision maker and feel guy rarely becomes a good one at the NBA level, just because the leap that you have to make from that point is just so far and you don't have as much development room at that point.
Let's take a quick break here, but first, today's show is brought to you by Grip 6. Looking for a great Father's Day gift idea? Grip 6 belts are ultra lightweight with no holes and no flap, which equals no bulk. Go to grip6.com/lock for a special offer. And remember, to get this show every day, subscribe to Locked On Heat on the free Himalaya podcast app. It's the perfect place to listen to the podcasts that you love and discover new favorites to listen to. Check out their playlists and share and comment on your favorite shows and episodes. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Heat. Thank you to our sponsors, Hotel.com. Thank you to Untuckit. And thank you to Grip Six Belts. Remember, listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us.
Yeah, I was wondering specifically about Hachimura, you know, and a team like Miami, and obviously this is who we're talking about here. You know, when we were looking at his skill set, you know, his skill set and how that might translate to the professional level, there's potential there. And I guess a lot of Heat fans might be banking on this team that's got a well-established pattern of developing players that are a little bit raw and kind of helping them fine-tune their skills and find their place, especially in the defensive end. If there's any hope, how do you see Hachimura's potential fit in a team like Miami that has that kind of history and pattern of establishing players?
Yeah, I think that's the one kind of saving grace of him ending up in a situation like Miami. And me and Wes talked about this last week when I was on. I'm one of the bigger Spo guys here, and I trust him implicitly to be able to bring out the best in anybody. And if you can make Michael Beasley a positive contributor, you can pretty much do it with anybody. And I think that their ability to put guys in situations that are beneficial to their strengths and weaknesses, I think that's a huge value to that player. And you can maximize guys even if they don't end up becoming the same type of player that you know, some of the other players that in a vacuum look stronger are more likely to become. I think that, you know, the Heat could figure out lineups to be able to pair Hachimura with, you know, pairing Hachimura and Bam together is great, because Bam's already great at covering and cleaning up messes, both on the perimeter and at the rim. I think that you can put him in a situation where he's getting those post-op opportunities that have, you know, gone to Whiteside in the past. And you can kind of really work with him as a shooter and try to really maximize that aspect of his game. I think that there are guys that we see that have these reputations that go to certain situations and end up thriving. We've seen Tyreke Evans over the last couple years with Memphis, and then with Indiana, get put in situations that are beneficial to him. The go-to reference I always use is Anthony Randolph at Real Madrid in EuroLeague. This is a player who just flunked out of the NBA for a lot of the similar situation or issues that Hachimura had, and then goes to, you know, the more rigid, regimented systems of EuroLeague, and gets put with a coach that can put him in situations where he just has him go out there and do things. And, you know, you take the good with the bad, and you just try to have him be as involved as possible for short stints, and it ends up working pretty well. And I think that Hachimura could be, you know, the same type of guy. They could use him like, you know, maybe like an early Julius Randle type, where you're really putting him in the post, you're giving him, you know, maybe 2-3 minute stretches at a time where he comes in and he is the guy for your offense that you're really working around. And then you just kind of have a group that's going to complement him and save him on the defensive end. And it can be functional.
Yeah. I mean, you look at a guy like Hassan Whiteside, right, who was sort of knocked for a lot of the same thing, just doesn't process the game at a high level. Doesn't, you know, not a tremendous feel for the game, basketball IQ, et cetera. And Spo was able to put him in a situation where his instincts for one thing, for just blocking shots, was put to the forefront in Spo's defense that he put together that year, where everybody was just funneling everything to Whiteside at the rim and running everybody off the three-point line and doing all that. And Whiteside all of a sudden became this monster defensive player for them, who was just, you know, getting triple doubles with blocks and all that stuff. And then obviously when Whiteside's athleticism started to wane and injuries started to pile up to his lower body, he wasn't the same kind of shot blocker. And, you know, this last year he started to put it together, but dude's almost 30, right? And in the case of Rui Hachimura, where he didn't start playing until late, like, it might be a while before he starts to, before it clicks, basically, right? And I don't know if basketball feel and all this stuff that we've been talking about is a development thing, if it just sort of slowly gets better, or if it is a situation where, you know, like, it's just supposed to click all of a sudden. I don't know. I don't think anybody could really know that, but maybe it's different for everybody. But I do think that there are situations where Hachimura could thrive. Trevor, you having him at 41 on your board, you're low on him, and I'm not saying you're wrong, but you're definitely low on him. Well, there's some people that have him in their top 10, right? I mean, some people just love this guy. Is it just the athleticism and the belief that he'll just put it together eventually, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's partially that. I think it's partially kind of the search for the next Draymond Green, and you get a guy that looks like him, especially on the offensive end, and you kind of just go with that. And I think there is kind of still this idea that we don't have a great understanding of kind of how college players are going to translate to the modern NBA game, just because the college game is always going to be reliant on post-ups. The players are more limited. They're going to rely on sets that are going to put guys like Rui Hachimura and Bruno Fernando into situations where they're going to succeed, and you don't know how those skill sets are going to translate. You know, Hachimura has the quickness and has the footwork and the dribbling ability that he maybe could become like a better driver and face up guy, but we don't really know that yet. And yeah. I think that's kind of what people are selling on, and that's kind of what I try to push against. It's less the skills that these players have, and it's more their ability to apply their skills in a way that elevates the way that their team plays. And I think that is the area where Hachimura struggles most right now. I think that, you know, there are always going to be a couple guys where it looks like their performance is independent of their team's performance. And I think that Hachimura was one of those guys. And I think that Gonzaga's success was far more predicated on the work of guys like Zach Norvell, of Brandon Clark, of a lot of the guys that they put around Hachimura, and they just kind of banked on that they were getting, you know, 16 to 20 points from Hachimura a night and taking whatever they were going to get on the defensive end.
His name is Trevor Magnotta. You can read his top five draft prospects for the Miami Heat over at The Step Backs. Thanks for listening. You can connect with us on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll be back tomorrow. Yeah!